this was. What I want, you got it in mind.
It's lights out. Away we go.
Like a flame that burns a candle. The candle feeds a flame. Yeah, yeah. What I got, full stop of thoughts and dreams to scatter. And you pull them all together. And how I can explain. Oh, yeah. Well, well, you.
Podcasting from Studio 2520, somewhere near Akron, Ohio, and live via the paid subscription of Zencastr, the campus of Otterbein University. This is Tackling the Chicane. Make of My Dreams, American duo, Daryl Hall and John Oates, taken from the ninth studio album titled Voices in 1980. Song reached number 5 on the Billboard Hot 100 chart in 1981. This track has received 154,000 digital sales between 2008 and 2009. Probably mostly accompanied by the Step Brothers soundtrack. The song has sold over 1 million copies in the UK to date, having never charted in the country.
Wow.
So there you go.
This song never charted in the UK?
Apparently not.
Wow.
Apparently not. But a fine track it is. And a fine duo if you have not dipped into the catalog of John Hall and Daryl Oates. Quite good stuff, actually.
Yeah, you know, a lot of confusion in the past amongst some people about the name. Daryl Hall, John Oates. Not Hall and Oates, not Holland Oates, not Hauling Oates. Daryl Hall, John Oates.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned that. Takes me back to a time in my professional career where I worked with a particular fellow who thought it was Hall and Oates, as in Oates being hauled somewhere. So
that's why I brought it up, because I remembered you telling me that story one time.
That's good stuff.
All right, a little tangential action there at the beginning, but sort of the greatness of the pod here. So go ahead. It looked like you want to say something.
Let's run her down.
All right, big rundown here for episode 78, if you can believe it. Since we've been away, a little bit of scheduling conflict last week, but back and better than ever. Since then, you know, obviously the Japanese Grand Prix came and went on the F1 calendar. We are going to discuss all of the on-track and off-track action and implications from this race, because the race was fine, but I think there was some stuff that happened that has more effect on the paddock and drivers doing this and that. So want to discuss some of that. And then on the soccer side of things, we probably witnessed what'll go down as a Old Firm modern day classic, as Celtic and Rangers carried out a 3-3 draw. In what left myself pretty speechless afterwards, and I'm sure you have some feedback on that one as well. But why don't we just kick it into gear here into the Japanese Grand Prix. It ended up being a, I would say, fairly straightforward day for Red Bull, who qualified 1-2 and would finish 1-2. Couple of major storylines going on here. Don't know where you want to kick off the discussion, but...
We'll start with the lap one contact between Ricardo and Albon, which brings out a red flag.
Yep.
Probably looked a little bit worse than what it actually ended up being, but it did delay the race by quite some time. Kind of feathered through that on the replay. Other than that, as you said, I think this one kind of went down in the books. The Williams team still suffers from some very, very bad luck indeed.
Yeah, that's kind of where I wanted to start with this one. Like I said, Red Bull get their 1-2. Ferrari end up doing actually pretty well, considering qualification struggles, perhaps you could say. Williams, is this... this is a team that can't seem to really catch a break at the moment. Obviously, Albon collected by Ricardo, who we'll discuss later, on that first lap incident. So his day is done. And then sort of fast forwarding towards the end, Logan Sargeant having a pretty standard day, I would say, for him until... Yeah, flying off the corner and finishing amongst the cars running last.
So let's talk a little bit about how this is no fault of James Vowles. This is no fault of their team. This is driver-induced issues. And when you don't have a chassis to spare and you're beating the shit out of the two that you have, it does not fare well.
No.
For the team. The daylight moment for those of us who are Haas fans are, okay, you guys keep effing yourselves and maybe, you know, we can bring something out of this season for Haas to finish in a decent position. And if they continue to have the luck that they've had, i.e. Williams, it's a fair shot.
Mm-hmm.
So I always go back to, and I hate to, I don't want to lean on the kid too much, but I think I shot you a text pretty early saying how many times are they going to allow Sargeant and Albon. Okay. So that was kind of that's a race incident. Okay. That could have happened to any one of the 20 cars in the field. But later on in the race, you know, off track again, you know, basically semi, I wouldn't say destroying, but they don't have a lot of these teams don't have a chassis to spare, but especially Williams does not have, you know, we can't doing this.
They quite literally said publicly they don't. So last race weekend, Albon smashes a car in practice. Then you have an FP1, which is what you texted me about. Logan Sargeant spinning out. I think he definitely caused some damage. Obviously a driver.
You were lucky to field that car.
Exactly. a driver with immense amount of pressure on him. And then in the race, when he was doing well, all things considered, just inexplicably goes way deep in a corner, locks up the tires into the gravel, done. This is a driver that at this moment in time has virtually zero confidence. He seems like a guy that when he is racing, he is trying desperately not to crash his own car instead of trying to go fast, which there's a big difference, you know. So there is no way this type of performance is sustainable. And you actually texted me this quote, "No way he'll make it to the end of this year. He may be finished now," unquote. I agree. There is no possible way he finishes this season.
I 100% agree with you. If he should continue to the end of this particular campaign, I'll be shocked. And I think that James Vowles has a decision to make. And there are other drivers out there that they probably should take a shot at this point. It's an American kid. I love the story. But if he doesn't have the sack to drive the car, and if he continues to cost them on the basis of every single race, he's kind of a factor. They're going to have to make a move, and they should do it very soon.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think he's going to make it to the summer, because usually we see, okay, summer break, someone that's doing bad traditionally gets the axe then, right? He seems to be, he's got to be, this has to be week to week at this point. He's just scraping week to week trying to stay in the car.
It kind of reminds me of the Mick Schumacher debacle that happened at Haas, where you had all this effort and faith and hope in a legacy driver, and mm-hmm. all he did was crush cars.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Crush cars. So,
yeah.
You know, I appreciate the fact that a lot of these teams, they always put their best foot forward during the pressers. And I don't know if you saw the presser with Vowles, but, you know, he's putting his best foot forward. But you could almost feel the tension in the room that, we're going to have to make some kind of a change here.
Yeah.
At least that's my thought process with it.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I see it lying. And unfortunately, I do believe Logan Sargeant will be on the chopping block pretty soon. I want to talk about another guy who I think is facing a similar level of scrutiny on his team, and actually was involved in the lap one incident with Alexander Albon, that being Daniel Ricciardo. This is a guy similarly to Logan Sargeant, who has been virtually invisible this season in terms of performance, and we know for a fact is driving for a seat within the Red Bull setup. He is someone that needed to consistently challenge, at the very least, Yuki Tsunoda, who, mind you, finishes in the points in this particular race and has done better than him in every race, I think, so far. And now we are at the point where we are crashing our automobile as well. So Daniel Ricciardo, to me, if this continues, might be another guy gone by the summer, because we know Liam Lawson is they panned to him during the race in the garage. He's there, he's ready to roll, and we know he's capable from last season.
Yeah, so Ricardo's Achilles heel is his likability and his the fans like Danny Rick, but the writing's pretty much on the wall. I mean, he's kind of in the shadow of the Williams team. He's in the shadow of Sargeant, because that seems to be kind of the go-to kid who can't get it done, but he's not doing well either.
No, not at all.
And RB can ill afford, as the second Red Bull team, to have somebody like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, personally, you know, we talked about in the past how Perez may have been kind of in the hot seat for a bit, but let's face it, you know, the guy's consistent. He's not crashing shit.
No.
He's not failing to qualify.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think if there's going to be two seats that move firstly or quickly in this particular campaign, it may actually be those two seats.
Those seats right now are scorching hot. And I think Logan Sargeant, I don't think he makes it to the summer. Danny Rick will probably make it to the summer, because he's not, the thing is, he's not offensively bad. You know, like Logan Sargeant is pretty stinky, you know, but
he's not great either.
No. And he hasn't really been great for a long time. So I'm kind of wondering, I understand from a business perspective why teams keep taking a chance on him, because he sells, but performance hasn't been there in years at this point. So yeah. I don't know. Two interesting situations there. I have like two other things I wanted to talk about before going into like some events of the actual race. Briefly, wanted to touch on Ferrari, because I think this is hilarious. And I guess the two points kind of go hand in hand. First off, we have to keep remembering that Carlos Sainz will not be at Ferrari next year. And he has been on the podium two or three times now and has won a race this season and has looked better than Charles Leclerc. Not going to be with Ferrari, currently does not have a seat for next season. Meanwhile, the guy Ferrari paid, probably unimaginable money in Lewis Hamilton, has been, by his standards, dog shit this season.
Right. We predicted early on that once the check was signed by Ferrari, this particular driver is not going to risk anything. I will just hang out. I'll hang out mid-pack. Not going to risk anything. I guess I don't have a crystal ball, but when this guy sits in a red car, is he going to be that much better? Is he going to be that much better?
I don't think so. I really don't think so.
I don't know. And Sainz, yeah, great point. There's probably all kinds of talking going on as to where he's going to go. Where should he go?
Yeah.
where would be the best fit for a driver of that caliber. But if you put him in a car that's not at the same level as a Ferrari, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He can be the best driver in the, you know, second best driver or the best driver in the Ferrari camp. If you put him in an Aston Martin or something of that caliber, will he be able to perform the same?
It's hard to say, but probably not. Well,
and that takes me to my note here too, is, you know, I'll read it verbatim.
Okay.
How is Alonso always hanging around? He's always just hanging around.
Yeah.
You know, he's fourth, fifth. He qualifies well. He, you know, obviously there's some kind of delineation between machine and man. Okay. Because he's in the Aston. Stroll's in the Aston. This guy is there at qualifying all the time. I mean, on the heels of Q3, he's in position three or four all the time. And during the GP.
Yeah. That is a driver that obviously, look, there's a reason he's been in Formula One for over 20 years. It's because he's a damn good driver. Obviously, he's a world champion, race wins, has driven for all of the great teams, including Ferrari. This is a guy that you put him in a Red Bull, I guarantee you he wins four or five races a season.
Well, so, and that's kind of, so as we get more and more into the series as viewers and now, you know, doing podcasts about this particular race series, there's a very fine line between man and machine. So that's where I'm kind of diving into this particular year is, okay, you know, and where does Alonso sign? Is he good for, I don't know. I don't know what his contract is. I'm sure.
Actually, just today it was announced he signed for next season.
Okay.
For Aston Martin. So that is interesting.
He is the anchor.
Yeah.
Of that particular team.
And from his perspective, why wouldn't you? You know, I'm sure he's making a healthy coin. He's the captain of the ship there, obviously. They tune the car to his liking. And he finishes, like you said, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, every week, sometimes even on the podium. So it's like, this is exactly, and you know, if shit were to hit the fan with Red Bull, and maybe even this season, which has been very refreshing, by the way, a Ferrari, that Alonso would be right there. He'd be right there. So definitely a driver that's getting a good tune out of that car.
I think where my headspace is as we continue through this campaign, where does Sainz end up? Who does he displace? What does Williams do with Logan Sargeant? What does RB do with Ricardo? And if, you know, if I had to guess, if two guys are out, and let's not forget about the English kid,
Behrman. Yeah, Oliver Behrman.
Yes.
If
I had to pick two guys that are going to be gone, probably Sergeant Ricardo looking for a ride at some point.
Yeah. Well, Sergeant will be, he will be running at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway by next season, more than likely. If I had to guess, very, very close ties to that series. So I think Sargeant, and that'd be great for him. ride in IndyCar has his name written all over it. As for Ricardo, he's past it, if you ask me. He doesn't seem like he wants to even be an F1 driver, but who am I to say? As for Oliver Bearman, that one is very interesting because obviously that is a Ferrari Academy driver for Prima. So obviously there's Ferrari and F1, and then you have the teams that have very close ties to that Ferrari driving academy, Haas being one of them. And that's kind of been what a lot of people are maybe speculating where Bearman ends up. And then I don't know after that, so, it could be anyone.
Crystal ball. Who does if Bearman takes a seat at Haas, who does he unseat?
Yeah, that's the tricky one. Obviously, Hulkenberg has, since he's arrived, has pretty much outperformed K-Mag on a weekly basis almost. So I would think it would be K-Mag. However, if I'm not mistaken, I think K-Mag or Hulkenberg is older than K-Mag. So I don't know. That could go either way, but I think it would be a little silly for Haas to get rid of Hulkenberg at this moment. So
speaking to that, and I was somewhat childishly hopeful that we could get into the points. We were in the points with just a few laps to go, and then Haas ends up 11 with Hulkenberg and 13 with Magnussen.
Yeah.
Could have been pit strategy, could have been, I don't know. One of those two cars ran on the same tire for almost 40 laps.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was an early stop. It must have been hards. You could almost see it coming that, okay, we're in the points. We're sitting at 10th. But now we're not sitting at 10th because
you get cycled out.
Tires are old. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So but you know what?
I was hoping for at least a point there, but didn't
see. You know what? What is kind of funny is at the beginning of the season, I think both of us would have thought, you know, Haas battling for points would be a great day for them, you know. So to be here, you know, a little disappointed that they're not in the points is kind of shows that maybe they are definitely exceeding expectations this season. So I hope they continue.
I wouldn't disagree with that. I think we're right there.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're in the mix. Good showings, no crashes, no incidents.
Yeah.
But yeah, we just need a little break. Could use a point or two. And it may come. We have a long way to go. If I had to be a betting man, I would put Haas above Williams in the points finish right now.
I honestly think so, 100%. Too.
And above Alpine. I mean, these guys are fucked up, too.
We haven't even talked about Alpine. Yeah.
They're having their own issues.
I mean, that car is just slow. They're just slow. And a little bit of a brush-up, again, between Gasly and Ocon, who maybe have the worst team dynamic in the entire series. Yeah, that team, shit show right now. Now
they're having trouble.
Yeah, I would imagine with updates, they're not going to be in the back. They're not going to be the back markers for too much longer. But still, I mean, the damage is done when you look at the points. I mean, obviously they're sitting on zero, one of three teams, Sauber, Williams being the other one. You would expect eventually Alpine to get some points collected, but already in 7 points back from RB and 4 points back from Haas. We know that the top five teams are on a whole nother planet right now, pretty much. So any point you can get is absolutely vital to this season. So to be 4 points down or 7 points down doesn't sound like a lot, but that's huge at the moment.
Yeah, I agree 100%. So I think we basically covered that. We've got Verstappen, Perez, Sainz, 1, 2, 3.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of covered the antics of the Williams team, and Haas just right very close to points at 11 and 13. Chinese GP, where are we? That's next week, correct?
Yeah, that's next week, not this upcoming weekend, the weekend after.
We'll get into that then on
next
Thursday.
So I guess I just want to quickly touch on the constructor standings. So the top five, so Mercedes and Aston Martin 4-5, split by 1 point, 34 and 33 respectively. Man of Mercedes, just, they have not been good. McLaren up 35 points on them right now. And then what is interesting is did you expect Ferrari to be this competitive to Red Bull?
I wasn't 100% sure going in if they would be. I thought Mercedes would have a little bit brighter showing.
Mm-hmm.
I think the exit of Hamilton is playing a lot into, you know, their particular performance right now.
Yeah.
Russell, he's shown way better last year than this year. Obviously, it's been kind of hush-hush, but I think they're struggling as much with their car as some of the other teams are.
Yeah, this is a team that has sort of fallen from grace pretty heavily since the regulations updated in 2022, and they just haven't seemed to figure it out. I mean, it's crazy to me how they could just dominate. I mean, absolutely dominate the previous regulations and then kind of just middling, you know, since then. Good enough for fourth at the fourth at the moment, but I don't know. Doesn't seem like a team that's in a great place right now, and that comes from the drivers. And I mean, Toto Wolff, he seems completely checked out every time you see him, but I mean, he's always been a little stoic, I guess.
Yeah, this is probably the third most funded team in F1 behind Red Bull and Ferrari, even though their performance hasn't really dictated that. But yeah, I guess every man has his day, and they had their day for 7 consecutive campaigns, and now we're into a different era. We don't need to talk about it for a long time, but, you know, this is no different than the last several races where we have a guy who finishes 12 seconds ahead of his teammate. He's driving basically the same spec car, and he's 12 seconds ahead.
Yeah. So, the thing is with Red Bull and Verstappen and Perez is right now it's a one and a half man band, I guess, because Perez is a good driver, but Leclerc, Sainz, Norris, maybe even George Russell, Alonso. Those are all, in my opinion, drivers that are on his level or better. So he's not ever going to challenge for titles. He'll be second or third every year because he's in a Red Bull, but he's a guy that gets enough points to supplement Red Bull, and Verstappen is the guy that gets the wins. And until that formula doesn't work for them, or they see that it might not work for them, why would they change it? You know, that's kind of where I'm at with them.
By strategy, we don't, unless you were in Perez's radio calls for the whole race, and maybe even not, because a lot of times the engineers make specific calls over the radio. When you're 12 seconds behind the leader and the guy behind you is 20 seconds behind the leader, don't tell me that Perez's position in this GP is one of defense.
Yeah. Okay, so
hang back, give Max enough gap, and you keep everyone behind. And, you know, the coverage of F1 doesn't go to the top three on a regular basis now, because
there's nothing there. Yeah. There's no battling.
Right.
Yep. That's kind of where we stand right now.
And as I said, I think the flavor of this particular series is mid pack, and it has been, and we obviously 37 minutes in, we can continue to speak to that. And Max will have at least one more GP where things don't go correctly, and somebody else will take that number one position.
Oh, for sure. And yeah, there's still a lot that can happen
there. Right.
Yeah. I'm just kind of wondering how long Ferrari can keep it respectable, you know, because they're 21 points back, but they have damn near double the points of third place McLaren. So it'll be interesting to see. I think Ferrari are a team. Well, here's what's hilarious with that. I want to say Ferrari are a team on the up. Well, they're replacing a driver in Sainz with, in my opinion, a worse driver at the moment. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see what happens when Hamilton puts a red suit on.
Yeah, I genuinely don't know.
You know, obviously, the topic of the day when this happens is where Sainz goes.
Yeah. He's not going to go
sitting here right now. He's not going to McLaren.
No, they're fine with their lineup.
They're fine with their lineup.
Mm-hmm.
So does he go to Aston? He's not going. Well, is he going to Mercedes?
Yeah, that's maybe weirdly kind of becoming an option. Yeah, that's sort of.
And now that we said that, I think that's probably the most likely scenario is that he goes to Mercedes.
Yeah, that's a competitive team. He could, you know, I think that's very interesting. He, you know, there is that past with Red Bull, but there's no way they would pair him with Verstappen unless, I don't know. I mean, okay, you want to talk about breaking the internet? If Sainz went to Red Bull, that would be insane, because that is an absolute behemoth of a driver's lineup. But I don't think that happens. You look down the field, Sauber, who are obviously about to be Audi. Maybe.
Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. So, yeah, I think we'll leave it there for F1, as we're sort of getting into some speculation here, but. Chinese Grand Prix up next on our Asian swing here, and then If I'm not mistaken, it's Miami after that. So headed stateside after that.
Yes. And did you put your entry in for the Miami ticket package that came out on the F1 app?
I did not do that.
Show, go to the app and it will pop up immediately. And please enter to win.
All right. Well, son of a bitch. Let's see what happens, I guess.
I did. And I've got Charlie Bucket's chance of doing so.
So you're saying there's a chance.
There might be a chance.
One last little tangent. Just saw on the IndyCar Instagram feed. Little testing going on for the 500. So getting close to that, obviously. And pretty much the de facto start of the actual IndyCar season in Long Beach next weekend. So that'll be something to keep your eye out for. For sure. Yes. So, all right. 41 minutes later, here we are, but let's go ahead and shift gears here into maybe the best Glasgow Derby that I've seen in my time. Look, okay, let's set the table here because I know you wanted some color and I think it is valuable to do this. These teams are separated basically by nothing at the moment. So Celtic right now, after this match, sit in first place, 32 matches in, so six left, on 75 points with a goal difference of plus 51. Rangers sit second, 31 matches played. So one less, obviously, 74 points and a plus 50 goal difference. Obviously, if Rangers were to win their game in hand against Dundee, if that ever gets played, they will go top by 2 points. But with a with this draw at Ibrox for Celtic, it actually still keeps the title in their hands, quote unquote, because they pretty much control their own destiny. So if they win the games they have to, then it's theirs, because Celtic and Rangers will play again at Celtic Park later in the season. All of this to say, yeah, this is the tightest this particular title race in Scotland has been in a long time. So, you know, as I kind of laid out in front of you, not much to separate these two clubs at the moment. So obviously when these two teams meet, you don't really have to hype it up. The importance is always there, but these are becoming absolutely massive matches. Again, we still have the weird thing going on where there's no away fans. So 100% Rangers faithful at Ibrox. That is supposed to change next season. The clubs agreed to get some away tickets in, I think somewhere in the ballpark of 2,000 away fans, which will be nice. I texted you, you know, when I said we were going to cover this game and said to keep your notebook handy, just as I guess a little teaser, because I wanted to say like this game was awesome, but I also wanted you to experience the fun of it. So
before we get into the kicks and saves of this game, I'm going to shuffle over and grab a beverage real quick, so fill in for 2 seconds.
All right. So we'll do my what is becoming somewhat weekly fill-in session as we refresh on the beverages. Why don't we quickly go into the Premier League, take a dip into there. Title race is very, very tight there as well. you have Arsenal, Liverpool, Man City, 1, 2, 3, all separated by 1 point with 7 matches to play. So we're definitely going to have more coverage on that probably on the next show, because that is actually a fantastic title race in and of itself. And while you're away, I was just quickly highlighting the Premier League title race between Arsenal, Liverpool, and Man City. Those three teams separated by 1 point currently with 7 matches to go.
Yeah. So shaping up for a great season in both leagues.
Yeah. So we'll be paying attention to both. Some more coverage on the Premier League next time around. But when the two Glasgow clubs meet, it sort of takes up our attention here on the podcast. And well,
first observation, so much fodder on the field.
Yeah.
Lots of oddly shaped balloons floating around and mm-hmm. weird.
I don't know if you saw, because I don't know where the recording picked up for you, but basically the Rangers fans did a huge display, like a TIFO. And it was, I think, exceptionally windy in Glasgow that day because they kept talking about the wind. So when they put the materials down, it's flying all over the pitch. Yeah, right. There were instances of balloons and other shrapnel from the fans flying on the field.
No attempt by any officials to grab said shit that was flying around. I thought that was weird. I mean, in a regular American sports game, if something comes onto the field of play,
yeah, they would stop instantly.
They would stop and be like, okay, let's grab this foreign object. But yeah. No, we'll just play on.
Yeah. So I guess, I don't know. I wouldn't even say a cultural difference. That's just a sporting difference. But we will have probably plenty of words to spill about the officiating in this one. Started off with the lack of attention to foreign objects on the field. But how about exactly 21 seconds into this match, Daizen Maeda puts Celtic up 1-0, torches James Tavernier. I got up and watched this one live Sunday at 7 a.m., and that was one of those goals that you kind of were just like dumbfounded, because how often do you see a goal scored in the first 21 seconds of a match?
No, it was possession and goal. And I watched the replay. Unfortunately, when you watch the Hulu replay, when you click in, it's at the end of the match.
Oh, shit.
I tried to do the la 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 thing.
Yeah.
But I saw the end score, and I was like, oh god,
that's unfortunate.
No, but I watched the entire match.
Mm-hmm.
So Maeda straight down, boom, rifle, 1-0, and then it kind of this match was very that there it was very quickly the pace was very quick, mm-hmm. and there was, even though that goal was scored early, it didn't feel like there was a 1-0. It felt almost like it was 0-0, mm-hmm. right? So there was a lot of, I mean, this, it was a very quickly action game, the entire minutes of this one. So, you know, Celtic shot and shot and shot in that first half.
Mm-hmm.
And I fully expected them to go up by another goal early.
But yeah.
It kind of went kick back and forth.
What we saw is Celtic pressing Rangers quite heavily in this early in this match and in the first half, and Rangers really just had absolutely zero response for the intensity that Celtic brought to this one at the beginning of this match. Obviously with that Maeda goal in the first minute, but like you said, there were attempt after attempt after attempt from Celtic. And in the first half, I think Joe Hart touched the ball a few times, you know, and I don't know if he ever even really had to make a save of any particular difficulty. Yeah.
Right.
Which is interesting. So you brought it up and I just went to the stats sheet here on my handy dandy app. Celtic had 14 total shots. 11 of those came in the first half.
Right.
So, I mean, we're talking about Jack Butland of Rangers being peppered with shots throughout this match, mostly in the first half. Again, Rangers seemed to have virtually no response. Defense was all over the place. And I think that showed in the handball incident with Connor Goldson in the 34th, where Matt O'Reilly takes the penalty. But you could see in that instance the defense was completely disheveled.
So PK for O'Reilly, and that leads to 2-0,
mm-hmm.
right? Goal. Hart makes two saves in the overage in the first half to mm-hmm. kind of solidify the defense, and then we have the half, and then in the second half I wouldn't say hell broke loose, but
yeah,
it did.
So that's where the game kind of lost its shit, and not necessarily all because of what happened on the pitch. Some of it was, let's say, assisted by, shall we say, video assistant referees and whatnot. But before that, you know, when Celtic, again, I watched this one live, so when Celtic were up 2-0 at half, I basically felt like that was done and dusted. Now, you knew if Rangers scored, it would be interesting, but to be up 2-0 at the half, the place was dead by that point. Booed off the park, Rangers, at halftime by their own fans. You're thinking, all right, it would take a lot to not see out this result. Well, a lot happened in the second half. We did get the a lot, so go ahead.
So my notes as a, you know, freshman fan of the game, Silva takes a dive.
Yeah.
And all of the commentary is, there's no way this is going to be a PK. There's no way that they're going to put a penalty against this guy because he dove.
Mm-hmm.
And then the opposite happened, according to my notes.
Yeah.
Am I correct?
You are correct. Yeah, we need to break down this play for a sec here. Fabio Silva of Rangers spent the entire match flopping diving. Around
flopping
the pitch, rolling on the ground as if he had been shot, making a total fucking ass of himself. So congrats to you, because you're an actual pussy. But anyways, Alistair Johnston, so here's what happens. Ball comes into the box. Fabio Silva and Alistair Johnston of Celtic meet each other to said ball. Alistair Johnston puts out a leg to challenge him, and then you can see kind of pulls it back right at the end, but then Silva sees the opportunity and sort of coerces himself onto the ground, putting a little bit of flair onto it for good measure. And originally, the referee, John Beaton, goes, nope, nope, not a penalty, and you're getting a yellow for diving, basically.
Being a diver.
Yeah, right. For simulation.
And in the box, mm-hmm. they said the same thing.
Yeah.
And then, so here's the most frustrating thing about watching this game. They were as happy when he made the PK as they were when he made the dive.
Yeah. So the
they were thrilled that Rangers had made that PK.
So here's what happens every time in this when this match is played, and it's a Sky Sports feed. Sky Sports' way of handling this derby is so stupid, in my opinion, because they think that putting Chris Sutton, who is a Celtic legend, perhaps, he played for Celtic for a long time, and Kenny Miller, who played for Rangers for a long time, in the same booth, is like, oh, well, we have each perspective, so it's fine. No one wants to hear a former Celtic player, a former Rangers player comment on this game because you know they're going to be full of bias, even if they try their best not to be. Why is that the option? Imagine you watch Michigan and Ohio State and they have Desmond Howard on one end and, I don't know, some Ohio State, Kirk Herbstreit, although they complain that he doesn't jerk off Ohio State enough, but regardless. Imagine if that was the booth. Like, that's just stupid, you know? So, yeah. Whatever.
So, Silva's a tool for 30 seconds, and then he's a hero.
So, that's what I don't get. Because how do we come to the conclusion as a referee that not only was my initial decision wrong, but I saw enough evidence to reverse my decision and take away a yellow card for diving, and then give a penalty. So people talk about VAR as a way to assist refereeing. It was never brought into re-referee games, at least from my perspective of how it should work. So why are we not... I don't understand how you make a call. It seems to be fine. No one is really complaining about it, obviously. And then a little guy in your ear who watched it slowed down 600 times when it always looks worse goes, you need to check this out. And then we know damn well every time they go to the monitor, the call is getting changed. That is just unbelievably frustrating.
Yeah. Well, that's been the struggle with this league since VAR came in.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a question, because okay. I have notes here. So a goal was taken away.
That is correct.
At some point. What? Give me some... Can you help me through that?
Yeah. So again, and I don't really blame you because it was a VAR fucking orgy there for about 10 minutes in the park. So
Rangers go up 2-1, right?
Rangers make it a 2-1 game. Celtic were still leading after that penalty. But then shortly after, Rangers equalize. And we thought it was 2-2 all. But then they go to VAR. They determined there was a foul in the buildup on a Celtic player to that goal. So basically that can't stand. However, the referee comes back onto the pitch after making that decision and points like this, which is the universal signal for a goal. So Rangers fans celebrate thinking the goal stood, and then he wipes it off like he's like, no. So you have no idea what's going on. So
right.
I
had no right. I was I have circles and I have check marks and X's, and I'm like, oh shit, I don't know.
Yeah, people didn't know. Obviously, a whole 50,000 people in the stadium didn't know what was going on, because it went from a swell of cheers to boos afterwards. So yeah, complete and utter farce from the officiating in this match, which unfortunately put a stain on what was a very entertaining match. Celtic are able to kind of nurse a 2-1 lead all the way until the 86th minute. And again, it was a total tale of two halves here, where Sema fires a goal in. Well, that was the one where it was like a bit of a shit show in the box in terms of Celtic's defense was all scrambled. And that just very ugly goal to concede. And it made it 2-2. And at that point, I thought that was pretty much that. Don't know if you had any perspective from that goal or not. It was just sloppy.
I was still kind of reeling from the other stuff. And then we have a Celtic goal, and I don't know what minute. I think it was overage.
It was the 87th minute, 87th. Yeah. And that was from the substitute, Adam Ida, the striker who's had a knack for kind of scoring off the bench this season since he's come in January. And it's like, well, shit, that kind of came out of nowhere. You know, he gets one opportunity and he slots it away. And 87th minute, you're going, that's probably it, you know. And the stadium, the life was kind of sucked out of it at that point. Rangers looked pretty deflated. But then here comes the timing board. 8 minutes, you're like, that's dicey. That's going to be dicey. And what I don't like is it seemed like Celtic suddenly switched to, okay, we need to just batten the hatches and kind of milk our way through this 8 minutes and hope for the best. And anytime you do that, you're just inviting pressure, which they did. Somehow Yang, our winger, gets into a situation where he's defending Matondo of Rangers in the 93rd minute. He gives him all the time and space in the world, basically saying, have a crack. And to Matondo's credit, he provides an absolute peach of a ball to make it 3-3. Don't know what you thought of that one, but as much as I kind of hated to see it go in, it was pretty special.
Yeah. And then, you know, this is the derby.
Yeah.
So we finish at a tie. Uh-huh. And now we are... where we are, right?
So. Yeah, it ultimately you felt a little bit of a sour taste in your mouth from the Celtic perspective, just because obviously,
but still, I mean, it felt like a victory.
Well, here's the thing: it's not on paper; it's not a bad result. You know, you get a point away to Rangers, the toughest place in the league to go play. You know, so you avoid defeat against your biggest rival when the title race is so firmly in the balance. Could go either way, really. So, yeah, from that perspective, you have to definitely see that as kind of a moral victory. But to blow a 2-0 lead and then take the lead again and then concede again is a little frustrating.
It's more than.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit more than frustrating, but we shall see these two teams meet again.
That is correct. And,
don't know the date of that game, but
no one knows because the league gets split after this next match, and basically the last five fixtures will be scheduled afterwards. So not really sure yet, but yeah, it'll probably be by the end of this month, I would assume, is when they would play again, but we'll see.
Yeah, so let's go, boys.
It's going to be tight. It's going to be tight. It's going to be nervous. Every game is going to be like a cup final from this point on. So it'll be interesting. Yeah, so very exciting. Very exciting. But
yeah.
I think with that, we are we have a show on our hands, and we'll leave it there.
Yes.
Yeah.
So with that, we will get gone. You ready?
Yep. Fire it up.
For executive producers, Richard Tanaka, David Bresky, Doug Skeen, and all the rest of the crew, this has been Tackling the Chicane, copyright 2024. We'll see you next time.